The opinions expressed here today are strictly those of the individual OA member and do not represent OA as a whole.
Hey, everybody. My name is Diane T., compulsive overeater and vice chair of the virtual region. Our region warmly welcomes you in joining us for our second episode of The Interview. This month, we'll be visiting with OA members who identify as anorexic and or bulimic. Their stories will include what it has been like for them in the disease, what brought them into OA, and various aspects of their recovery journey, including how they work their programs today. So we have Chris, welcome Chris, John B., and Danielle B. So, Chris, good to see you. And John? So, thank you. Thank you for coming and being willing to share your recovery journey with us. John, Chris, Danielle, we've all chatted, and I think we know a bit of each other's stories. For me, after a series of traumatic childhood events, I learned that my body wasn't a safe place to be. I saw it as grotesque, fat, loathsome. I had, though, the normal, healthy-looking body of a little girl, but I didn't see it that way. I even remember something acute like the summer of fifth grade before June was out. I wanted to wear shorts so badly to school, but I felt incredibly fat. So I remember wearing navy, dark navy pantyhose under my shorts so people wouldn't see my ugly, grotesque legs. Can any of you relate to having had childhood experiences that you felt distorted your body image or made you see your body as being unsafe? Anyone want to raise your hand and just speak? Go ahead, Chris. Love to hear from you, and then John.
Hi, everybody. So nice to be here. I'm Chris, anorexic, and I also say compulsive eater, but mostly anorexic. Very, very, very grateful to be in OA. My life has been saved, and to be here today to, as a member who continues to show up after just about almost four decades in this program. The question, yes, Diane, I didn't know it then, but now looking back, I see that both of my parents had certain aspects of eating disorders. My mother was continually on a diet, even though she had a perfect body, and my father was telling her to make sure to stay on that diet because she needed it, whereas he was, he was obsessed, and she was obsessed. And so, born into that family, like, how am I not going to, have an eating disorder? Today, it's a story. It's just a story, and there's no blame attached. I absolutely love both of my parents, and my father has passed away, and they did an incredible job with what they had. They even just did an incredible job, and what my thing is to, as of the age of 26 when I came into this program, is to start to take responsibility and how can I change. And with this program, it has given me everything I need to change those things around, those first attitudes. So maybe that's enough. I'll just say quickly, I remember I was starting to develop like a normal young girl and kind of busting out of this pair of long johns I had, right? Remember? And I remember my father looking at me saying, if anyone's going to have a tendency to get fat, it's going to be Chris. And I had a little bit more curve than my two other sisters. They were like models, but I had just a tiny bit of curve. And so that meant I could be fat. So there was a disease of eating disorders in my family. And yeah, thank you.
John? Thank you, Chris. John?
Yes, I'm John. Yeah, I have substance use disorder and I've had compulsions and I definitely have body image stuff and I've wrestled with bulimia at various times in my experience here on the planet. I would say none of it is easy and all of it's for a reason. And a lot of it started in my youth where I got messaging that said I wasn't enough or I never felt loved and seen and heard. And it was a violent, household and it was, a drunken household, and it was a gossipy, mean-spirited, uncomfortable household with a cycle of unfortunate behavior and disconnecting from God and really dysfunctional. And although I physically lived through it, I didn't psychologically or emotionally really manage to get out unscathed, I would say. And so my life has been a continued, you know, we could say it any way you want, but opportunity to get closer to God, opportunity for personal growth and development, opportunity to get a better body image because, you know, when I was, you know, head to toe, there was nothing right about me as far as I could tell. And so I've really had to look at, you know, I can also remember pictures of myself when I felt like I wasn't perfect or there was something wrong or a place I needed to work on. I looked like a normal kid, like a normal, happy kid. And I can remember in elementary school being in a locker room where somebody older than me had a six-pack abs, and I was like, wow, that's what I need to have. And so that's not what I would say exactly healthy for a little healthy elementary school kid. And then my father had an eating disorder and his own mess, and my mother was drunk at dinner, and my first memories are of sitting at a table and me just stuffing my face to try to numb the disastrous experience of sharing meals. And I think that was probably the birthplace of my disease.
And if you hang on to that, we're going to get some more of that with the next question. Danielle, did you have anything you wanted to share with body dysmorphia, maybe related to some earlier events in your life?
Yeah, I'm Danielle. Thank you to the two previous people who shared. I feel like I'm in good company. I am still figuring out everything that I am, but I'm definitely, you know, a restricted anorexic sugar addict and a compulsive overeater, I guess at the least. I was unaware of my story and my history, and I love what Chris said. It's just a story, but it's mine in the fact that I needed to know what that blueprint was and kind of how I got here. Now, I don't think that the nature of how these things happened is overly important, but it did help me to connect some of the pieces. You know, I too grew up in an alcoholic home with each parent having their own eating disorder and version of an eating disorder. And I think it was my 9th or 10th birthday. Really, really is the memory of right around when there was no discussion whatsoever. There was no talk about anything. I woke up one day and I was put on a diet, you know, and I was only permitted to have, you know, and some people that are around my age will know this, you know, a shake for breakfast, a shake for lunch, and a sensible dinner. And there was, that's just what happened. And I was a rule follower because I was one keeping the house kind of together and followed those rules. So right away that was known that I was not okay. My sister was a bean pole, a stop and stare. Out of curiosity, like she was being, you know, taken care of. She was that skinny. You know, many, many markers from that point forward. A couple specific ones was that, you know, I always got very excited on holidays where we could have different treats. And as soon as I would open one of those treats, some family member, any of them, would just say, you know, that's not good for your figure, you know, but they would always say that's not good for your figure all the time. And then one day, you know, I specifically remember getting ready for a Halloween party and I was really excited about my costume. And, my mom made a batch of something and, you know, it was all done and it all looked very nice. And I got all the extras to eat it. And she looked at me and she darted at me so seriously and said, "You have to put on a Halloween costume later." And it was that whatever went into my body, then you all could see, you know, and it was like, I mean, I still struggle with that. Okay. Not nearly to the degree that I used to, but, you know, I mean, those are just some things that definitely formed a delusional opinion of myself. So, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, all of you, for sharing how the various events in our lives, right, all of us, it seems, fell prey to the notion that our bodies were not acceptable. And, you know, I remember when I was a kid that sugar-dense foods, especially the Greek pastries in my youth, had a sedative effect on me. I remember being something like 7 years old and in my grandmother's pantry and eating things like baklava and finikia, and all of a sudden I just felt so drowsy. So I realized, whoa, this stuff has an effect on me. This takes me out of the game and I'm woozy and all I want to do is go to sleep and disappear. So, John, you started to touch on that. Did you want to chat about how you found the food affecting you from when you were a kid?
Thank you. So I can definitely remember, specifically I was talking about at the dinner table, just consuming massive amounts of food and drinking massive amount of milks just to push down my feelings. You know, it was the beginning of corking my disconnect from experiencing, you know, the energy that was not, you know, like suppressing my feelings and emotions. And if I did speak or act in a certain way, I'd get, you know, there'd be a physical aspect of what came next, which was very unfortunate. And I also noticed eating to the point where I could literally only operate the remote control for a television, you know, big holiday meals or anytime eating numbed me out. It definitely was mood altering substance, flour and sugar and massive quantities of stuff. And I used to get a lot of, I also got positive reinforcement from friend groups because I could eat so much. So it was a multi-layer dysfunctional set of coping mechanisms that, you know, would have killed me. So that's what I would say to that.
Thank you. Chris or Danielle, would you like to share about how you, maybe from your early experiences realizing the effects, let's say the allergy of the body that various foods might have had on you? Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Chris, anorexic, and I could, John described it well, just a real, I was binging on breakfast cereals, the sweet breakfast cereals, and like, more milk, more cereal, eat it all, more milk, more cereal, eat it all, until the box was gone, and the shame on top of that, that I finished, you know, the whole thing by myself. It's like it really was the perfect solution because I really couldn't participate in life. I just couldn't. And then with the sugar being in a complete haze and a complete stupor, really drunk, it was perfect. All I could do was lay on the couch, you know. And TV fit right in with that as if I was doing something, but just, you know, just – the messages from television and society just like coming in and I'm sitting in on the couch in a stupor or laying and, you know, apart from the family. Then dinner would come along and I had absolutely no appetite for real food. So binging on sweets was definitely my thing. And it really put me in a complete stupor. I had another sister who went into dance. I wanted to do that too, but I never knew the class would come along and whether I had binged or not would mean whether I could even show up or not. And mostly I was in a stupor if I couldn't show up. Thanks.
Thank you. Danielle, your early experiences of how various foods affected you.
So I was not quite as in tune when it came to the sugar. I just knew I liked it and everyone else knew I liked it. And they would always make jokes as to how many desserts Danielle was going to have on whatever holiday we were at, you know. But on the flip side, this just connected for me during the shares and while you were speaking, Diane, was when I put all of my willpower together and I was able to stop eating, that's when I felt like I had the power to rule the world. That was a cape that nobody else could see, and I had a superpower that ran me around that you did not have. And I felt so, I felt like I had a secret in the back of my pocket that everybody else wanted, and I was the only one who could have it. And that's when I made the real connection that, well, if you're gonna be a glutton with this other stuff, you can flip the script too, because you just have that much control, which anyone on this meeting probably knows that was fleeting. Only worked as long as it worked. So thank you.
Yeah, and picking up on what you just said, Danielle, and thank you, Chris and John. When I was 13 and I noticed my body was starting to change with the onset of puberty, I felt fat. And I decided I was going to remedy the situation by not eating. Right, Danielle? I was going to not eat. Several days at a time, I wouldn't eat. I remember one time walking into my social studies class and my teacher saying, "You're looking a little thin, Diane. What's going on?" I said, I just remember this. I tried on my bathing suit and I didn't like how I looked. And he just put his head down and walked away. When I was 15, I discovered bulimia. I thought, whoa, the perfect panacea. I could eat whatever I want, vomit it, and not gain weight. So it worked, .. until it didn't. And so I went to vomiting once a day to, like we say, our disease is permanent, progressive, and fatal. I went from vomiting once or twice to dozens of times a day. And what I couldn't vomit, I made myself get my butt out there and run or bicycle or lift weights so I wouldn't get fat and I'd get rid of the calories. And even more than that, I did it because I wanted the demonic voice of my disease to stop. Mm-hmm. The disease would abuse me to eat, to get me to eat, and then it would beat me up, it would abuse me after I've eaten. And if you want to talk about how the progression for you started, the anorexia, the bulimia, any experiences you want to share, those earlier days when it started to happen for you. For me, I don't know if you can relate to this, but for me, the disease in my head told me more than anything, because I couldn't do something as simple as control my food, I was worthless.
Yeah, I mean, I could certainly relate to everything you're saying, and I can also, you know, I mean, I totally get the progression of it. And it's interesting to me because while I'm thinking about your talk, I'm thinking about, like, when we have ideas that are, we have a problem, and then we have a solution to that problem. And if the solution to the problem is a bad idea, it multiplies. And I've come to realize that my, you know, this program elevates my ideas, and my bad ideas die so I don't have to. And when I had the bad idea that I could throw up, I could control that, and I could eat whatever I wanted and whenever and however. And when feelings happened, I had a career as a stand-up comic for 10 years, and there were rituals about how I would do it and when I would do it. And there was violence to it. And I got better at it and more proficient at it and eating more and being better at getting it out of me. And it makes me sad to really even like, cause I would be in the most disgusting bathroom there was and trying to figure out how to get on one knee and not, you know, like have my knee not be in some nastiness. And then couldn't even look probably at the toilet. I mean, it was such a bad idea. But man, oh man, did it have a grip on me for quite a while. By the grace of God, not to the point of permanent damage, or not to the point of losing my teeth, or not, you know, like whatever we do that's a bad idea that we continue to do, eventually the piper shows up or the fiddler, and you got to pay. And Man Oh Man program came along, and that no longer felt like a good idea, and thank God for that, I would say.
Thank you, John. Chris or Danielle?
Yeah, I'll just say quickly that, you know, so much of what we did and the shame and the bottoms are so similar, like I'm sure for so many people here. But I find it really helpful to look back and see where God was there, even in the worst of things. And I had tried to throw up, and I couldn't. I tried just once, and that was a gift from God that I didn't go down that route. I just kept with the anorexia. But I do love, like, looking back and seeing, well, where was God? You know, where was there just a little speck of something that kept me, you know, alive and kept me until I could find the true solution, which is this program, Overeaters Anonymous. Thanks.
Danielle, anything you want to share about some of your earlier attempts as you were launching into your disease? So speaking of launching into the disease, about some, like, and Chris, you talked about a little bit, some of the extremes that we went to. There's two hallmark memories, or I would say pinnacle experiences, if you'll excuse the irony of that term, of this disease that I recall. One is, I'm 63 now, but being 21, in my grandmother's basement in the middle of the night, vomiting plain cold pasta I had eaten, because who cared what it was? I just needed to fill myself and then vomit. Vomiting over a bucket in the basement using a wooden spatula because my esophagus was so damaged I couldn't use my fingers anymore. Crying, begging God to get the food up. It would never happen again, right? The foxhole prayer I'd said so many times, and begging him, please don't let me die and have my family find me in the morning having choked to death on a spatula. And the other experience was, I guess that just wasn't enough, right? Because God had to whack me in the back of my knees to get me here. He gave me the gift of desperation. As we know, a picture's worth a thousand more words. So I, a little over 6 years ago, had septic peritonitis as a result of this disease. I was on life support. Here's my show and tell, the aftermath, how I'd been cut open. And that brought me running into the rooms. Peak, or let's say bottom moments that you folks can recall that you want to share that brought you in to these rooms.
Yeah, well, the moment I shared before in the comedy club in the basement in a bathroom was certainly right at the top of it. But, you know, substance-related moment that had me, you know, kind of double back on a major relapse I had when my son was I was in program before my son was born, and then the wheels came off the bus because I was essentially nesting in some ways and working hard on the house, but my program fell apart, and my diet, and I was using drugs and eating, and I can remember then my son was born, and I can remember holding my son in a bathtub, kind of just washing him and thinking that my heart was going to explode and I was going to die. I was going to die, and I was going to miss all of this life that I had in my hands. And I was freaking out, and I got him to a place where he was safe, or handed him off. And I ran back to the rooms like my life depended on it, because it did. And I found my old sponsor, and he was like, you know, man, I'm here for you in your recovery, and got right back into the steps and right back into abstinence. And so those would be two moments that I could point to, and probably that, with my son as a baby, you know. For me, I didn't grow up till I had kids, I would say. And thank God that I chose life and program and God pulling me through so that I didn't. I haven't missed a thing. The kid's going to be 20. Going to be 20 in a few days. It's really something.
Danielle, thank you, John. Danielle, would you like to share some of the bottom experiences that brought you into these rooms?
Sure. My first OA meeting was in 2016, and that was the rock bottom that brought me into that room, into the rooms at that point, was that my son turned six and I couldn't stop eating his birthday cake. And I just remember thinking that I was a prisoner to the couch and the fridge and the couch fridge and the couch in the fridge. I would love to tell you that I stayed in OA from 2016 on, but I really just dated OA when it was convenient for me because I had another program and kind of just couldn't take it as seriously as I took the drugs. I just couldn't do it. And so then, you know, in God's infinite wisdom, I also at that point had no concept what an anorexic or a restrictor or any of that stuff was. Well, I did have a concept of it, but I did not qualify because I wasn't hospitalized and, you know, on a feeding tube, right? So I just disqualified myself. The disease in that particular manifestation progressed so significantly in 2020 and 2021 that I had a few instances that led to my rock bottom. I would love to tell you it was the fact that I gave myself two hernias from lifting very heavy weights, malnourished, but that wasn't it. I would love to tell you that it was the near kidney failure that I almost put myself in through doing a self-induced water cut. And I would love to tell you that because I couldn't walk upstairs and hold and catch my breath because I was so malnourished, that was also the other rock bottom. But none of those really were the rock bottom. It was this moment when my daughter had seen, I guess, how much weight I was losing and how neurotic I was with the food that I was eating, that she was about 8 or 9 years old, and she said, you know, I think I want to lose some pounds too. And that really was one of the pivotal moments. And I know God just picked certain things. It wasn't about me anymore. And I think they say, like, it doesn't matter what gets you here. It's what keeps you here. But those are just some of the things. You know, I can destroy myself and not really bat an eyelash. But as soon as I saw the effect, I said, oh, she's going to grow up just like me, which is wonderful. That's a peaceful heart and mind. I just didn't want that for her. But she's not the reason I stay, but she's definitely the reason that caused me to take this seriously.
Let's thank you, folks. Let's move gears to some of the challenges that you may have experienced when you first came into the OA program. I know for me, I came in weeks after getting home from the hospital and the nursing home and being very weak, but I still looked fit. I still looked healthy, a little bit skinny, but I looked okay. And we were in in-person meetings then, and in the rooms, there were a lot of people that were either overweight or obese, and I felt like I somehow didn't fit in. But then in hearing people's shares, in hearing their stories, or as we say, hearing them speak their truths, I realized that underneath, we're all sharing that same malady, whether it's eating and vomiting, eating till we pass out, not eating for weeks on end, eating only foods that are white or foods that end in a vowel, or even other addictions. It's all the same disease of, like it says at the end of the acceptance prayer, I need to concentrate not so much what needs to be changed in the world as in what needs to be changed in me and in my attitudes. I was not, and still am not, I'm in no way fixed, able to handle in a healthy way life and the people in life. I chose ways to disengage. So how about you folks? Anything that you can think of were your initial challenges coming into the rooms? Yeah, Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris, anorexic. And this message that I got from OA was like, you know, this message of hope of, you know, you can be abstinence starts right now, today, right now with the next meal. That message was so incredibly wonderful but so it felt so out of reach. And in order to really take that message, which I believe is available to all of us, you know, it starts right now. Here we are. Most people aren't eating right now. And the next meal, I can get support. If I can't pick out that next meal on my own, I can get support from all you. There's a lot of numbers I see going in the chat. Help me pick out that next meal. Stick to the plan and call somebody. Oh, I'm getting a call. Let me say not accept. Decline. Stick to the plan and have one meal down, you know, and then the next meal, then I have some life in between. So that message was so, it was a gift and I was receiving it in my first meeting, but how do I take it in? And for me, I turned on the good quality of my anorexia, which is control in certain respects. And I was like, I'll be damned if I don't have this. And I went to a meeting every day, and this isn't the live. I was in the New York City area. I lived in Jersey. I took the bus into the city every day, and I went to an OA meeting every single day, and that lasted 2 years. And I experimented, like, you know, one time, whatever, I maybe wouldn't go to the meeting. The food would get hard. You know, I couldn't accept people in. I couldn't really get close to people, you know, and allow the help to come in that way. But I could get on a train or bus, and I could sit in a meeting and hear that message once a day, maybe even more sometimes. And so then I was able to take in that gift, what Elway says. Abstinence starts right now, you know, right now. And that's what happened for me. I had to do it for 2 years. And after that, I was still going to tons of meetings. So I always would love to tell people in any kind of relapse or whatever, trying to get started. Now with Zoom, how easy is it, man? We can go to 5 meetings a day pretty easily, you know. So it's just like, can I accept the message of what OA has for me, abstinence? You know, can I take that in? Well, I needed a lot of help, and I would sit in meetings to let this new indoctrination come into me that I could have abstinence. 3 hearty, yummy, healthy meals a day with a lot of life in between. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. Wow. Thank you for your courage. John or Danielle, would you like to share some of the early challenges for you when you came into program?
I would just say early challenges were, you know, I attacked it too with the veracity that came with going to meetings most days for a couple of years. And I think for me, what became difficult was in some sense how easy it seemed to be. And I would say that the relief and the spiritual awakening and that turn toward God, you know, like, less whatever and more God spoke to me in a way. I was already a pretty spiritual dude, and it just went to a next level. And then I rested on my laurels. So I would say that the whatever that means, I just got lazy or I prioritized wrong, and I felt like I had it. And then, you know, the ego edging God out creeps in, and next thing you know, you're eating something you were committed not to, or you're you know, the timings, you weren't putting it first, what you needed to put first. And so that creeped in. So, you know, for me, I would say it was always predictable, healthy pattern that you need to, well, for me, I needed to put enough energy into. When I didn't, the wheels start going in the opposite direction. And I would say I felt like I had it handled, and it was easy now, and that was obviously, that was a bad idea. So I ended up running around again in the food a little bit.
Gotcha. Right. So you're either going forward or going backward, but we can't stand still. Gotcha. Danielle, early challenges in program.
Learning from you guys, recovery's responsibility and everybody else's opinion outside of there really don't matter. Dealing with comments from family, either encouragement, you know, to eat certain foods, getting a food plan was harder than getting a toddler to eat a carrot. I mean, it was like, I really bucked a lot of things. I would love to tell you guys that I was struck abstinent, and that just was not the case. I fought every single thing because, you know, who knew better than me? So I had a lot of early challenges, really, but But it turns out that once I started doing everything that you guys suggested, oh, my life just got better by the day. Just basically saying that I finally got to a place where I just took everything that you guys said with as though it was the truth. And because I found out that, like, I was actually really enjoying feeling better. Like, I did not, oh my gosh, one thing that if you would have told me this, I didn't know that eating the proper foods was going to make me feel so good. Like, I thought you guys were so full of it. Like, I felt like an actual functional member of society once I started eating balanced meals at regular intervals. It was like a mind-blowing experience. The amount of difficulty that it took to get there is really astounding. But it's also proof that I just need to stay.
Yeah, gotcha. Almost like you're saying, oh, you mean I can't run my car on water? I've got to use gasoline? Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention, I don't know if you folks dealt with this, but when I came into program, I had the big banner over my head. You would be sick, too, with an eating disorder or some other malady if you experienced the trauma and the horror that I did. And I learned early on in program, it didn't matter. And you know what, Chris? I even remember once walking with you down the hall to White Plains Hospital afterwards, and I was on my rant, and you said, it doesn't matter what brought you here. And you said it the most loving way, and I was like, how dare she? I didn't say that to you. But I realized, even if I had the perfect childhood, I still would have had this eating disorder. I didn't pick it. It picked me. Okay? Twist of the mind, allergy of the body. My problem with specific foods, I don't think are any different than somebody who has a shellfish or a peanut allergy. And Chris, and I thank you for being one of those main people, ironically, that you're here today, who helped me to realize that. And it's so freeing because you know what? I'm not a victim. I don't have to have the people that hurt me heal me or fix me. OA and the big guy upstairs. Yeah. Anybody want to share on that before we move on to working program?
I'll just add to that, Diane. Thanks for saying that. You know, that connects with gratitude. What more than gratitude do we use as a tool to get abstinence? So it's kind of just like looking at my past and everything in it and the people who did whatever they did to bring me to where I am today. Like it says in the big book, we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And if that's true, I might not like certain things. It might be real hard to accept, but I can at least, that's why I like to say it's a story. I don't want to hang out there too long. Life is short. I've been given this miracle answer in this program. Let me get to it. Thanks.
Hey, John or Danielle, anything you want to share before we move on to gifts and recovery?
I would agree, and I would also say that I'm alive. You know, like I'm on the planet. I get to do this. I get to have this experience, and I, you know, I looked at, like, what is it to honor my parents and all the chaos? It's like, take the best of them. There was plenty good about them. Take the best of them and then take the lead that came my way and turn it to gold and not push that downstream into my kids or into my grandkids. So, you know, this is for me about my journey and my personal growth and development and my victory over my darkness and a victory over darkness itself, you know, and that's no small feat. This is all beautiful, noble, important work, and man, and we're right in it. It's the good fight, you know. Anyway, but I would say to that.
Yeah, great. So, gifts of recovery, the promises. I know within the first year I was in program, things started changing. I was living with someone who is like an aunt to me for 33 years in the same apartment building in another apartment, whom we had such a toxic relationship. But I was afraid to move out because of financial insecurity. But guess what? That was all up here. that wasn't in the bank. In the bank, there was no need for me to be financially insecure. In less than a year in program, I moved out. I got this great apartment. I got the cats I waited a lifetime for. I stopped work. All my time is devoted to volunteer work. I get out on my bike every morning. I go to church. I kayak in the summers. This is the life that God intended for me. And I started seeing those gifts come early on in program. Folks, gifts, share about those gifts and how they started coming your way when you started working your program.
I'll start with that. I think of like what would sound so silly to other people, and it doesn't matter, but the stuff that you guys understand. I don't have like full on anxiety attacks in restaurant parking lots anymore. I ate breakfast for the first time since being in recovery. I had breakfast with my children for the first time since, you know, being in recovery. I actually know what it feels like to have you eat and then, have energy to go do other things. That's a mind blowing phenomenon. Not trying, you know, I remember that the number on the scale or the reflection in the mirror or walking by a piece of glass, you know, shopping center or something, if I just caught that wrong reflection at that wrong moment, the entire day was ruined. It was so easy to have today is a now a bad day because of that. And the gift of recovery has been you can restart your day at any time. And I'm not so bullied by my emotions and my thoughts. And I try not to take them so damn seriously now. I wouldn't say that I have total body acceptance by any means, but I would say that I'm not a prisoner anymore to what carries me around and does this job. The miracles they're hard to put into words, but they happen every single day. And the fact that I can actually be around the foods that want to kill me and look at them like I'm watching paint dry on a wall, it just doesn't affect me. You know, if it does affect me, then I know to speak up and not tolerate my thinking without telling on myself. So there's just so many things. It's truly, truly amazing.
So let's fast forward to life and recovery today. Action plan, how you work your program. For me, I'm a ridiculously early bird. I get up early, I pray, I meditate. I won't tell you what time I wake up because most people won't believe me. I pray, I meditate, I take care of the cats. I pray, I meditate some more, I stretch. I answer any kind of communications I need to take care of. And get on the bike, I go to church, I pray on the way to church, I greet the sunrise, I feed a couple feral cat colonies on the way home from church. I'm listening to an OA meeting, I jump on in person when I get home. And then that's like the foundation of my day that is non-negotiable. And of course, healthy eating, right? But interesting, right, how I just threw that in there. It's like the 12 steps. Food's only the first step, right? Of course, the healthy eating goes without saying. And then my life is devoted to service. All right, page 77, third line of the big book. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. That's me. Folks, take it away. Let's hear how you work your program today.
I can go. If my food starts to get a little messy, I make sure that I start texting it to my sponsor. Otherwise, I speak to her in the morning. Our routine lately is we go through the big book and we read a paragraph a day. I get up early. I do different breathing, meditation. But a big thing for me, the gift, is that I realize as someone who's not married, no children, live alone, you know, my ability to learn. I'm learning after all this time in OA, I'm learning how to connect to another human being in a deeper way. And that means you guys. I'm not talking about the relationship or anything like that. I'm talking about my fellows, family, you know, people in my community. I'm learning. I'm growing up. It's taken me a long time. And that is truly the biggest gift, to be in reality, a grown-up worker among workers. And I'm actually not working, but just being in life and not in my fantasy world, but in reality, and what that means. And I'm shocked at how challenging it is for me and how much I need the program and all the steps to continue to see my stuff, which is always coming up, and wonderful OAs to help me look at it and work through it. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. John, you want to share how you work your program today?
Sure. I would first like to say, you know, you talked before about just how the program and the promises happen, or what the shift was. And I'll never forget this as long as I live, going into White Plains Hospital, walking through a cafeteria with a lot of the stuff that was ready to take me down. And I went into a conference room and sat around the biggest table I ever sat at with some of the most incredible people. And we stood up in the beginning and we held hands and we said the Serenity Prayer. And I said, what is happening here? This is amazing. I mean, we're praying together and I felt it. I felt like home. I felt like, man, this is where I'm coming back. My gosh, I've never experienced this in community with other humans. And I'd been to a lot of places where God was supposed to be, but well, I felt God in a way in that first meeting I went to, like, it was just a miracle. And then since then, I would say, not perfectly, but consistently over time, continuing to orient myself toward moving away from, like I keep saying, bad ideas today, but moving away from what was killing me and letting God be front and center without a doubt, and continuing to orient myself to love and being accountable to the most sane, loving humans on the planet and program. I just got married. Who I invited were people from program, you know, like they're like my besties now. And I always kid with them when they go from that OA name to just their name, that's the sign that now they're in a different, you know, they're like, now they're in the circle, so to speak. We're all in the circle, but you get what I'm saying. And so I drill down on my spiritual, physical, and emotional well-being every day, all day, basically, in some form or another, with people from program and meditation and prayer. I love step 11. I love working through the steps with sponsees. Right now, I'm working with a guy who I've never read. I've been doing this a long time. I've never read such a thorough answer to the questions that he and it's inspirational. Like, this guy is not leaving any stone unturned, I'll tell you. He's really willing and going deep into the abyss. And in the abyss, you know, we find the light. And so that, and praying and meetings, and being a yes to service and a yes to you, Diane, when you asked me to talk. I mean, I'm on the way from Cape Cod to New York, and I didn't work out the way I thought it was today. So I'm sitting in some, I don't even know where I am, really. My wife got me to this parking lot. She's in reading the New York Times. And I'm here on a meeting with you guys in a parking lot. I don't even know, like, anyway, you know, like, it's just what we do, you know? Like, my life is, I say it's an embarrassment of riches. It just keeps getting better, and it's because of the program. And it's no messing around. There's an unseen force that wants me dead. And unless I pay attention and deal with what there is to deal with, and I've had, you know, I would say they're varying degrees to the force that's tried to disrupt me, but I've had an extra good professional dark force after me ever since I can remember. And I've suffered and paid, you know, in some ways, but continue to come back swinging and fight the good fight one day at a time. You know, thank God.
Thank you. Danielle, you want to share how you work your program today?
Sure. I turn my volume up a little here. I would say that I laughed at what Chris said about the controlling anorexic part, because I really don't waver. I mean, and I don't even think I have to list the things that I do. I think I just have to explain what my morning was like. You know, unfortunately, my daughter's a little bit sick right now, and it was getting worse. And I said, we better go to the patient first, right when it opens, you know. And I just had my whole bag with me, you know what I mean? Because if I don't get the things done in the morning that I have to do in order to present myself to the world as a recovering person with principles, then I'm so off, you know, I'm just so off, and I don't want to know what that's like. And I don't want to accept the consequences of what that's like. So, you know, we're in the waiting room and I'm doing my reflection and I'm doing my readings, and I mean, there's just no excuses. There really isn't, because this is a gift that I've been given that's, you know, contingent. It's a daily reprieve that's contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And even if I do all of those things, I can still mess up, you know, but all of the tools and all of the fellows, if I didn't have the God squad, if I didn't continue to reach out, I mean, nobody understands us like we understand each other. That is such a gift. The things that I can say, and Diane will laugh and be like, yep, thought the same thing. And you just, they're the deepest, darkest parts of our souls that we share in this like environment that is so sacred. And I'm just so grateful for it. But yeah, no, there's no excuses. I do the same thing every single day, and I try not to tolerate my own messed up thinking without checking it with somebody.
Thank you. Thank you, Danielle and John and Chris. Anything else you want to share about how you're working your program today before we move on to Q&A and shares? I'd like to share with you the movie, My Name is Bill W., James Woods in the lobby of the hotel. You remember that? He's pacing back and forth in front of the bar, and he's like, I want a drink, I want a drink. He's like, he's really feeling it. He's sweating. So what does he do? He grabs a phone book. For those of you too young, you know what a phone book is. It was things like the size of the whole Encyclopedia Britannica. So he grabs that stuff where he looks for phone numbers and starts making phone calls for who he can help. And have to tell you, all of you have done that for me today. There's 63 of you here, and I have to tell you, I was miserable. I spent most of the night and the morning in the ER with severe GI issues from my death debacle 6 years ago or so, and was feeling down about so many things. But guess what? Being here with you and doing the work that God asked me to do, can I tell you, I am lifted. I'm ready to go bounce off of clouds, and that is how I work my program. This is how we do it now. Yeah. All right. Any other comments before we switch gears here? Chris, John, Danielle, thank you.
The opinions expressed here today are strictly those of the individual OA member and do not represent OA as a whole.